It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. After 4 years in a slump, the U.S. housing market hasn't crawled out yet, and a new report today is expected to show sales of existing homes fell again in October. But the second home market may be another story. It's proven more resilient, at least in New Hampshire, where more than 10% of the state's 600,000 residential properties are classified under seasonal, recreational, or occasional use. Of course, the concentration of vacation homes depends upon where you are. For example, in Goffstown, just outside Manchester, second homes only account for 1% of the real estate, while in Moultonboro, right by lovely Lake Winnipesaukee, 61% of the properties are vacation getaways. And these numbers have a big impact on resort communities' economies, taxes, jobs, and demographics. Effects that New Hampshire Public Radio's state impact reporter Amanda Loader has been exploring in a month-long series, both on the air and online. Today in The Exchange, sizing up the second home market, the trends in this sector, and their effect on our state. And let's hear from you. If you live in an area dense with second homes, how do you feel about that? Do you see it as a net positive or net negative for your community? What are the impacts you see, whether on jobs, property taxes, or the demographics of your town, with second home owners moving in permanently? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. With us in studio is Amanda Loader, as I said, NHPR State Impact Reporter. Now, State Impact is a collaborative project of NPR and NHPR, happening both on the air and online. And Amanda, thanks for giving us your time.
Thank you.
Also with us, Russ Thibault, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia. And Russ, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Well, Amanda, what struck you the most as you've gone all around the state looking at this second home market?
Well, there are a few things. First of all, like you were talking about, just the sheer number, that was incredibly surprising, especially when you're talking about a small state with a small area. And the concentration is also something that you notice, that it's not everywhere, you know, that there are a few areas where they tend to be more popular, and also that they're a big part of the tourism market in the state. I mean, that's pretty clear. If you lump together smart manufacturing, high technology as a single sector, tourism, that's when tourism becomes the number two sector in the state. So it's huge, but there hasn't been much in the way of studies for this is the economic impact of these particular people who are showing up here and remaining for, you know, weeks or months at a time.
Maybe a little harder to measure their economic impact too, Amanda, because it's easy to measure X number of people came into our hotels and campgrounds and whatever over the weekend. But second homeowners, you know, it's a little more difficult to gauge.
Right. Yeah. And we know they spend a lot of money. I mean, these are people, they need to stock up their homes with groceries. They're, you know, they're recreational folks. So, you know, they're oftentimes, you know, they're buying liquor, they're buying furniture to stock up their homes. They're buying all sorts of things. But you're right. There's not a lot of ways to track that data.
What do you think, Russ?
Well, to begin with, it is very difficult to measure it because it's difficult to know how many homes really are truly second homes. Now, the census defines that for us. The definition is very clear. It's not your primary residence. But what about somebody that, like my sister, that lives in Florida for 6 months and New Hampshire for 6 months? Where does she declare her residency? If she calls Florida her primary residence, then New Hampshire is going to be a second home. If she declares New Hampshire as her primary residence, then her home in Florida is going to be. So there's a little bit of a definitional issue in it, and it's April 1st is when it's measured every 10 years. So you start with that. Just the definition of where do you live if you have two homes can make it difficult. But there was a study that was done, and I hadn't seen it until last week when I got ready for the show, that was done in 1999 for the Forest Society that estimated the economic impact of vacation homes back in 1999. And it was really phenomenal numbers. The direct impact, almost $500 million.
Wow, and that was back in 99.
And that was back in 99. And then if you include, for example, the people that, as Amanda said, the people that own a second home in New Hampshire then buy stuff at the grocery store, buy furniture, and you accumulate all of those impacts, it's almost $1 billion a year back in 1999.
Well, and people who don't live in a home constantly may also need property managers, somebody to come in and mow the lawn, somebody to come and make sure the pipes don't freeze.
You know, I live in Belknap County and along Lake Winnipesaukee, and I think we have more landscapers than any other place in America. They're everywhere. So there is a lot of property maintenance, even grocery stores, which you would think you don't think of it as being very tourist dependent, second home dependent, but people come up and they get their relatives coming up, a big party on the weekend. So there's a lot of spending right across the board. The number of restaurants in the North Country, far more restaurants than the local population can support. If you go to Exit 20, where the outlet centers are, or North Conway, where the outlet centers are, tremendous impact there. Those retailers wouldn't exist but for the tourism second home part of the market.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the exchange, we're shining a spotlight on New Hampshire's second home market. As we've heard, not as well studied, perhaps, as other economic sectors. We're looking into some of the details, some of the economic benefits, and later we'll look at some of the downsides of having a heavy concentration of second homes. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Or send us a short email, the address exchange at nhpr.org. And Amanda, just to jump into the numbers a little bit more with you, you mentioned this, and I came across this as well, a number that said Northern New England has among the nation's highest concentration of second homes. According to this study, it was Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, and in that order, 16, 15, and 13% of all homes. What about Florida, though, Amanda, or South Carolina or Colorado? I mean, those seem to be just as vacation-y as we are.
Well, Florida in particular, the thing with them is they are number one if you look at just the raw numbers. If you're just counting individual houses, yeah, Florida has a lot of vacation homes. But if you look at it as a proportion of their housing stock, meaning, you know, what the people who are living here as a primary residence and the secondary homes, all of a sudden, you proportionally, New Hampshire's housing stock is overrepresented, you could say, by these vacation homes.
I was kind of struck by that, Russ.
Yeah. If you, as Amanda said, it's absolutely right that Florida has 10 times the number of vacation homes as New Hampshire. But they represent about 7% of Florida's housing stock. Our 65,000, roughly, second homes represent over 10% of our housing stock. So we are number three in the country in terms of the proportion of total housing units that are second homes. And then if you get into some of the different counties in the state, it gets much higher. Coos County, about a third of the housing stock is vacation second homes. Belknap County, the same. Carroll County, which has both part of Lake Winnipesaukee and then the North Conway area, about 40% of the units in Carroll County are second homes.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it has a very big impact in those communities. If you get Concord South, not so big a deal. Not such a big deal.
Well, let's take some calls, both of you. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at the economic impact of second homes in New Hampshire. And first up is Stephen in Nottingham. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. I wanted to comment because as I look out my window, I am looking at beautiful lake-driven, wind-driven right now, Lake Pawtuckaway. And I wanted to talk about a sequence that I see occurring, and I think very nicely. You talk about the good and the bad about it. I want to talk about one of the good. What happens is people come to Pawtuckaway State Park. They enjoy it. They love camping. They love the hiking and the canoeing and the boating. And they say, wow, I'd like to be here. And then they start looking around. And then they start renting. And then they start buying that second home. And then that second home becomes their primary residence. Now, I can only tell you, as one of the captains of the Weed Watchers, that we are that they are some of the most enthusiastic, dedicated people to New Hampshire and making this community viable and healthy and green.
Because they came for the lakes, and they love those lakes, don't they, Stephen?
And they want to really preserve it. So, I mean, I'm going to talk about I think that sequence is fantastic, of which I am part of.
Well, Stephen, thanks for calling. Amanda, I have heard this story from so many people. I vacationed here in the summer with my family, or I went to a summer camp every year on a lake, and I loved it so much I bought a second home, and then the second home became my primary home.
That's generally the story. I mean, that was one that I heard over and over and over again as well. And, you know, when I was particularly one of the town that I profiled most closely in my reporting was Moultonboro. And I was talking with the folks there, and this is absolutely what happens, especially with these newer folks, the folks that are coming in and buying a lot of these homes. They're primarily affluent baby boomers, and they tend to be very, very engaged, and they show up in these communities. And I mean, on the one hand, you know, they're very engaged. On the other hand, you know, some folks say, oh, you know, too engaged, too much. You know, they're too upfront about things. But
you just got here. Leave it alone for a minute.
Yeah, you know, this is how the way things were. But I mean, overall, they do tend to be very active in things like, you know, looking at the milfoil issue, looking, you know, for noxious weeds, and, you know, going out and doing these activities, whether they're here full time or whether they're here as more of a snowbird and they're maintaining two residences, like Russ said. So that is something you hear. I mean, there's definitely a flip side to that, which is if you are sort of a lifelong vacation community resident, and here are these people who are coming in and they're doing things differently from the way they were, or maybe they're being a little too upfront about getting involved right away, that, you know, that can potentially ruffle some feathers of the long timers. But overall, yeah, most people that I talked to, they liked that aspect of these folks coming in and rental. You're right. I mean, when I was talking with a realtor, he said, you know, flat out, our biggest market are the people who rented and then went on to buy.
Well, and cultural impacts. So it's interesting what you say, Amanda, and what Stephen brings up, but also demographic impacts, Russ, here, right?
Yeah, I think going forward, we've got a lot of issues going forward when, you know, as I said, in some of these counties, they're almost half of the housing units in the county. The interesting thing, going back to what Amanda was just saying, how they are very active, I think, disproportionately maybe, in terms of environmental protection. And sometimes it's last, I'm here now so nobody else can come. There's a little bit of that.
Pull the drawbridge up.
Yeah, pull the drawbridge up. I'm here. But interestingly, one of the interesting issues of this is if you go to Amanda's community that she looked at, Moultonboro, it's been estimated that 80% of the property taxes in Moultonboro are paid by second homeowners. They're a big proportion of Moultonboro's housing inventory to begin with, and they're worth more unit by unit.
Those homes, yeah.
Those homes are worth more, but those people don't vote. They don't vote. So it's kind of interesting that on the one hand, they're very active kind of in various organizations, but they don't have a vote. And as they become permanent residents, they will have a vote. And that can make a big difference.
So political impacts, economic impacts, demographic impacts. We'll talk more after a short break.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and the NEEF Network organizations, partnering with New Hampshire colleges and universities in November to bring you I'm Going to College Month, nhcollegeclub.org. And from the Elliott at River's Edge Outpatient Care Facility in downtown Manchester, providing lab, x-rays, CT scans, open MRI, physical and occupational therapy, and more. ElliottRiversEdge.org. New Hampshire weather for today, partly to mostly sunny, cooler, highs 35 to 40 across the North Country, 40 to 45 in central New Hampshire, 45 to 50 in southern parts of the state. For tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, lows 20 to 25 for most of the state, 30 to 35 in southern parts of New Hampshire. And for tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, highs from 38 north, ranging to 48 in the south. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the vacation home market, how big it is here in the Granite State, and its many effects on New Hampshire. Economic, but as we're hearing, also political, cultural, and demographic. 1-800-892-6477 is the number to join us. 1-800-892-NHPR. If you live in a town with lots of second homes, what do you think of it? How does it affect your community? What are the impacts on jobs or taxes or demographics or the political culture of your town? And what do you make of the coming trend of more second home owners planning to retire and become permanent residents? 1-800-892-6477 is our number, 1-800-892-NHPR. Joining us now on the phone is Frank Roach. He's president and owner of Roach Real Estate in Meredith. And Frank Roach, thanks a lot for being with us. We appreciate it.
Good morning.
Well, just from a purely economic standpoint, first, Frank, how would you assess the value of the secondary home market versus the primary home market. You don't have to give us raw numbers, but just how important the second home market is here in New Hampshire.
It has huge importance. When you focus in on the Lakes region, what it's done for our communities and developments that have built out over the years, it's what it's created for services, contributed to the local communities, and it's been growing and growing ever since I've gotten into business.
When you say services, give us an idea of what you mean there.
A lot of the home builders are obviously very active, everybody from carpet installations to contractors, electricians, and so forth. But it's the attraction we've had. I've been in the business now for about 35 years, and it's the first time in my career during the last several years that I've seen a demographic move of people coming to the Lakes region instead of the focus being entirely on the southern New Hampshire area because of jobs. When you figure that New Hampshire was ranked the most livable state in the nation for the sixth straight year, and then we were very fortunate to be picked the number one state for retirement in the country, according to MoneyRates.com. Those things kind of help our demographic up here in New Hampshire's Lakes region.
Wow, number one for retirement, New Hampshire was ranked?
That's correct. And another thing, too, in another magazine it was rated by Macmillan Guide, Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire, was rated the number one retirement place in the country under the category leisure living for recreational and cultural opportunities. So that's a strong statistic when you're looking at other competing markets like Sarasota, Vail, Colorado, other areas that were ranked behind us in that particular book that came out.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned those other resort areas, Sarasota and Vail, Colorado. Amanda Loader did some reporting finding that New Hampshire, Vermont, and Maine have the highest concentration of second homes. Why do you suppose that is? You mentioned some of the attractions here, but is it also just location, 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 Frank?
I think the location is a very important factor. For example, we're only an hour from New Hampshire's seacoast, and yet we're surrounded by, you know, hundreds of lakes and streams and mountains to enjoy all the recreational pursuits that active semi-retireds are pursuing these days. We've had so many people relocating from just recently this week, for example, we sold a couple from Pennsylvania and another one from New Jersey that moved up. One of the couples had looked in the state of Maine and Vermont for 2.5-3 years, and they finally situated in Guilford, New Hampshire. So it's interesting to see the demographic and the reasons why they are attracted to our state. But it's certainly the natural resources. Many of them vacationed here as children. They came up with their parents. Some of them went to camps and they had fond memories. And what they're trying to do, I think, is bring their families back, their grandchildren, their children, and experience the same memories that they had as children. The sound of the lake, hiking up the mountain trails and the different boating activities, the cultural resources that they have here in our region. Things from Meadowbrook to the shopping to so many different antique shops to restaurants to go out and enjoy.
And Frank, do you have a sense of how the second home market compares to the primary home market? How regular real estate is doing compared to vacation real estate?
Well, I would say just in our office alone, probably 70% of the transactions this past year were second home and retirement sales, compared to about 30% for the primary market. We see communities like Southdown Shores and Long Bay at Southdown, where they contribute pretty close to 20% of the entire city of Laconia's tax revenue generated from just those two communities alone.
So does that show you that the second home market is stronger than the primary home market?
I feel it is right now, because even though we have a tough economy, okay, people plan these kind of moves out over their entire careers, and they look forward to the day at some point in time where they can move to a more peaceful surrounding where they can enjoy the pursuits that they haven't been able to during their hard-working years. And the other thing we're finding is they're coming from different markets. Southern New Hampshire is very strong, obviously, but Eastern Massachusetts always has, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey. We're seeing people from Pennsylvania and certainly from Florida, where they'll do both markets and they'll go down here during the winter months.
That proximity issue that you mentioned again, location. Frank, thanks a lot for being with
That's
us.
A big thing.
Yeah.
And when you consider that we're basically we're within a day's drive of 100, say 10 million people, that's a huge statistic.
Frank, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Frank Roach, again, president and owner of Roach Real Estate in Meredith. Our number for you to join us here on The Exchange as we assess the second home market in New Hampshire. Economic impact, demographic impact, also a little political and cultural impact there. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Russ Thibault, if I could follow up with you, too, before we go back to our callers. What's your sense of how strong the second home market is relative to the primary home market?
Well, nationally, the second home market didn't have a good year in 2010. Sales were down 11%. Overall, prices were down. But that's primarily because of Florida, Arizona, Nevada.
Dragging those national numbers down.
Yeah, they had a lot more investment buyers in the second home market, and we didn't have as many investment buyers. So in New Hampshire, I think Frank's right. I think it's holding its own. What I think we see on the big lake, or the big ticket homes, the sellers can hang on. They have enough. They have the ability to hang on, and rather than sell cheap, they're hanging on. It's taking longer to sell. The inventory is pretty thick, but prices are holding up fairly well. One thing that we haven't talked about is there's not just one second home market. There's actually several of them, I think, in New Hampshire. You can buy a small cottage that used to be a rental cottage for maybe $80,000 or $100,000, and it goes all up to the multi-million dollar estates on Lake Winnipesaukee or Squam Lake or Newfound Lake or Lake Sunapee. So there's really a diversity there. The other thing I would point out, as you noted, Laura and Amanda did, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont are very – second homes are very prominent, the most prominent in the country, those three states. And I think Frank hit on it a bit. It's a combination of very nice resources, our lakes in New Hampshire, our mountains in New Hampshire, the Maine ocean, the ocean in Maine. But that by itself wouldn't get us to the top three. It's a combination of those resources and the tremendous economic vitality close by. Nationally, the median distance to a second home difference between a second home and a primary home is 300 to 500 miles. Here, it's much less than that because we have so many affluent people close by in metropolitan Boston, southern New Hampshire, close by those important recreation resources. And that's unique, almost nationally unique.
Well, and Frank talked about something that you've done a lot of reporting on, Amanda, and that is, again, the demographics of this. Now, we touched on it earlier, but let's dig into it a little more. As he said, and as you both have said, a lot of these second homes are owned by older baby boomers, who many of whom are looking at possibly becoming permanent residents. How is this going to shift some of these demographic forces that are already at play in New Hampshire?
That's sort of the big question mark. And actually, it was when I was interviewing Russ, because I was originally going to be covering just the economic impact of this home market. I was interviewing Russ, and he says, you know, this is the question that, you know, isn't being asked so much, is what happens when these baby boomer vacationers retire to these homes? You know, what happens then? You know, started digging into that because that struck me as a very compelling question. And it's not something that a lot of these communities seem to be thinking about, or the state necessarily seems to be thinking about. And there is this aspect of the uneven aging of New Hampshire. There was a report issued by Steve Norton, the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, talking about this silver tsunami. Is talking about, well, if you look at a place, even though Coos County, there are a lot of vacation homes, if you look at a place like Coos, when you're talking about the aging, overall you're talking about a group of people who are, what you might say, aging in place. Those are the people who were in their 40s or 50s, and then they're moving into their 60s, and they're still there. If you're talking about a place like, say, Carroll County, or especially Carroll County, some extent Dent, Grafton County, and Belknap County, those sort of lakes areas, and
amenity
White
areas.
And White Mountain areas. When you look at those places, you see amenity aging. You see people coming up there specifically for the purpose of getting older in a nice area. They want to be there. And so that uneven nature, I guess, is – it's something that, you know, in some areas they'll probably need to be thinking about harder than in others. And in Moulton Borough, you know, they've been looking at some of their services. What do our retiring seniors need? And this is where things got really interesting to me, because, you know, you have that group of the older people who have been there, you know, you're sort of your Moulton Borough lifers. And then you've got these folks who are coming in, and they fit into that senior bracket, but they're the younger seniors, and they have very different demands for services. And they still, when they gave a survey to the people saying, hey, what do you think of our senior services? They didn't get very good marks from anybody, because and the way that it was explained to me was, you know, we haven't stumbled on the right formula yet for what they need in terms of recreation and in terms of other services. There's such a diversity right now that we just don't know. There's too many types of people.
So adding more water to the silver tsunami, Russ?
I think it does. within the Lakes region, Lakes Region General Hospital just expanded, I think, about $100 million bond issue, a very, very sizable issue. So did the hospital in Wolfboro, Huggins Hospital. Excuse me. I'm sorry. And I think part of that is because of the silver tsunami. And it's a combination of aging in place, as Amanda said, and also an anticipation that more and more of these second homes are going to be occupied, if not permanently, for longer periods. A lot of the boomers, one of the trends is that boomers are going to keep working because they have to, but maybe not full time. So maybe instead of coming up Friday night and leaving Sunday night, you come up Thursday night and leave Tuesday morning. That still has an impact on the region. As Amanda said, an aging population needs certain things that may not be there now, especially an affluent elderly population may want certain things. But they also don't want other things maybe, for example, schools. They may not want to spend as much money on schools because their kids are grown and gone. And they'll be very concerned about taxes. The old we're on a fixed income and property taxes. You can spend $30,000 to $50,000 a year on property taxes if you have a very high-valued second home in New Hampshire. And that's priced some of the local residents out of the market. So,
okay, could we talk about that just a little bit more? Because we talked a lot about the benefits of this trend. Now we're getting into some of the potential downsides. Talk just a little bit more about that, Russ, if you could. The idea that, okay, great, having lots of second homes drives the tax rate down, but it can drive property values up for everybody.
Particularly on the lake. There's somewhat of an impermeable It's somewhat impermeable between lakefront properties, for example, or high-valued second homes and the year-round housing market. But when I moved to the Lakes region in 35 years ago, it was very common for a working-class person to have a cottage on the lake, on Lake Winnipesaukee even. I lived on a street that ran along Lake Winnesquam. Most of the houses on the lake side, not my side, the other side, were owned by people that worked in Laconia. That is essentially impossible now. So one of the real price impacts of the second home boom has been that primary residents, people that are living and working in the area, can't afford to be on the lake anymore. We've been priced out.
Even though the tax rate is lower.
And we got the benefit of the tax rate being lower. If you look at the proportion of second homes in a community and its tax rate, there's a very high correlation. Moulton Borough, Amanda's community, has one of the lowest, if not the lowest, property tax rates in the state. Holderness on Squam, very low tax rate. So there's pluses and minuses here. I think as a resident of a high second home setting with a lot of second homes, it's a little bit disturbing that it's virtually impossible for a year-round resident to live on the lake. Even doctors and lawyers have a hard time now.
Let's take some more calls, both of you. Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And let's go to another Stephen. This is Stephen in Wilmot. And Stephen, good morning. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Stephen.
I have to step outside for a second because I'm in the special office. I've been on hold. I just wanted to say that we were coming up here quite a bit vacation-wise, and then we moved to southern New Hampshire where the money was better and it was just a little easier to get by. And then finally, you know, we got some property up here, and we moved up here to what they call the quiet corner of New Hampshire. And what we found is a conflict between the folks that have been born and raised up here and the people that move in. I mean, in terms like flatlander and, you know, they're going to want streetlights and sidewalks next and blah, blah, blah.
Trash pickup.
You know what I mean? And in actuality, it's the folks that move up here that appreciate what is here and want to preserve it. You know, they don't want to change all that much because they're going to pay the taxes too on that type of stuff. And that's one of the reasons they move up here. You know, a little less regulation and a little less live free or die. You know, a little more live free or die. But like one fellow said to me one time when I was mentioning something, he said, "Listen," he goes, "you're not from here and you never will be from here." You know, and so you get that you get that sort of, I don't know if you call it dichotomy or whatever it is.
Well, Steve, it's real interesting. And Amanda, you talked about that earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, I personally, as somebody who just moved to New Hampshire not too terribly long ago myself, I mean, I find that kind of attitude interesting because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Russ, but I think that isn't New Hampshire mostly transplants? I mean, it's there. Yeah. So
we have one of the highest in-migration rates in the country, I think.
So, I mean, odds are if you're meeting somebody, they're probably not from New Hampshire, born, raised. But in these vacation communities, there is that ambivalence. I mean, they like when people come over, they don't have to deal with them for a long time. There are these folks, Moultonboro, for example, blows up by tens of thousands of people every summer and then it empties out. And, you know, there's negative effects in terms of there's not that demand for certain services. And so maybe the work's a little thin as you move out of that peak season. But at the same point, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, they like their small town feel and they don't, and they like that they've known these other folks forever and ever, and they don't have to deal with a whole lot of new faces. And this idea of people wanting to change our community. I mean, on the one hand, you do have folks who are saying, well, you know, even the snowbirds and, you know, even these other folks, we like that they volunteer with Meals on Wheels. We like that they're hanging out and volunteering with the library committee and, you know, various groups like that and helping us to track down this milfoil problem. But at the same point, you know, there is this sense of we have our traditions, and this is you know, if you have a lot of new people coming in, well, there's a change to that tradition. And people live out in these rural areas precisely because, you know, they don't want to deal with big city types.
Well, and conflict between newcomers and old timers happens everywhere. But if we have a higher concentration of second homes in New Hampshire, then in most states, probably seeing that conflict magnified. You know, another question for you, Russ, and put on your economist hat if you could. What's the economic impact of this large second home concentration on the state overall, even for people who don't own second homes and likely never will, even for people who live in Nashua or Goffstown or Concord, you know, not anywhere near any of these amenity areas?
Well, I think that it primarily is transferred through taxes and jobs, the statewide impact,
overall.
Even if you're in southern New Hampshire and one of the communities that doesn't have a lot of second homes. Statewide, I think second homes pay about a quarter of local property taxes. And remember, we have a statewide property tax for education. So it does help really the whole state's economy. People in Concord maybe go up to Exit 20 and do some shopping at the outlet centers. And without that second home population, we wouldn't have those places. So I think it's taxes, jobs, and some retail and restaurant opportunities.
All right. Although I live in Concord and I have never been to those outlets that you mentioned. And all right.
Bring
and our number 1-800-892-6477. And we'll be right back.
It's an audio feast, and we saved a seat at the head of the table just for you. Join the Third Coast Festival for the most satisfying, mind-boggling, heartfelt radio made in 2011.
Alan called me at 4 o'clock in the morning, said you have to come now. I have proof.
It's the best of the best, the 2011 Third Coast Festival broadcast, featuring the winners of our annual competition.
The best of the best begins at 9 a.m. and continues at noon this Friday on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and the Grant family's State Motors Lincoln, offering a selection of green-friendly luxury crossovers and sports sedans rated up to 41 mpg city. State Motors, North Manchester, statemotors.com. And from the McLean Law Firm, supporting the Boys and Girls Club of Manchester and Greater Salem, inspiring young people to realize their full potential as productive, responsible adults. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, former ABC foreign correspondent Barry Dunsmore on his new book, There and Back, describing his many years of international news reporting. You can email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, we're looking at the many impacts of the second home market in the Granite State. Economic, of course, but also demographic, political, cultural. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Our guests are Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia, and Amanda Loader, NHPR's State Impact Reporter. State Impact is a collaborative project of NPR and NHPR, both on the air and online. And both of you, let's go right back to our callers. Sarah's been waiting in Wolfboro. Hi, Sarah. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I grew up in Wolfboro, and my mother still lives here. And I just wanted to mention some benefits and also a couple downsides of the high percentage of second homes we have here. Largely, I see it as beneficial. We have the tax money that's generated gets folded back into the community here, is what I've noticed, in the sense that it gets folded back into public services. We have, like, three public beaches here. We have public hiking trails, bike trails. We have expanded hospital, as was mentioned earlier on the program. We have my high school just got renovated, and it got renovated in a way to get it LEED certified. So this is all during an economic downturn, keep in mind.
So lots of benefits for those of you who live there full-time year-round.
Yes, and the other thing is it supports local small businesses. We have very few chain stores in Wolfboro. We only, from my recollection, really only two.
So all can I ask you a question, Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
Russ Tebow talked about, he's conflicted about this. He sees the benefits that you do, but he also sees longtime residents really no longer being able to afford to live on the lake, for example. You're just really priced out of a lot of housing.
Well, I think that's very true if you living on the lake. But the thing is, it allows my mother, who was a teacher, she's a retired school teacher, they don't pay them a lot in New Hampshire, as you probably know, to live in Wolfboro because her taxes are very low. We actually have a view of the lake in the wintertime when the leaves fall. So, we're not on the lake, but because there's three public beaches and there is access to it, it doesn't feel quite as exclusive. I think that is a problem. I think people are priced out. And the other downside, which I was going to mention, is that the new homes are so much larger and fancier than the sort of old lake homes. In fact, right near my mom's house, there's been a lot of teardowns. So these old sort of charming lake houses were torn down, and these enormous new homes were built on Lake Winnipesaukee.
Right. Sarah, and that's something that we covered, Russ, a couple times over the years, the teardown of the old cabins, the building of McMansions, which has an impact, an environmental impact, a tax impact. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, visually the lake's not the same if you're out on the lake. The older homes might have been close to the lake, but they had the benefit of 30 or 40 years of tree growth. So on the lake, the aesthetics of the lake have changed, and not for the better, generally speaking. A combination of, in some communities, Guilford, for example, a lot of condominiums. But on Winnipesaukee particularly, a lot of McMansions. It's not true on the other lakes to anywhere near the same degree. Lake Sunapee, for example, still has a lot of rustic cottages on it. Newfound Lake does. Certainly Squam Lake does. But on Winnesquam and Winnipesaukee, the character of the lake has changed. It's changed on shore, and it's changed on the water itself with more high-powered boats, for example, larger boats. Used to be a 13-foot Boston Whaler was a fun boat to take out on the lake. Now it's actually treacherous with all of the boat chop that's out there and the speeds that boats travel at. So the lake has changed. It used to be if you went out on Lake Winnipesaukee on a weekday, it was a quiet place. That's not the case anymore.
Well, and also, and we've talked about this on the program too in years past, Russ, there's a water quality impact of these larger homes. People generally tend to landscape them more in a fancy way than the older, smaller, more modest homes. They want big open lawns and a big view, and there's runoff issues when you do that.
There are, but
that's been a struggle.
Yeah, they are, but a lot of those older cottages that are very cute had virtually no septic system
Good
at all.
Point.
So, it's sort of a 50-50 deal.
Pick your poison.
Right.
Thanks a lot for that call, Sarah. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Let's go to Wilmot again. Meredith is on the phone. Hi, Meredith. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I've lived in New Hampshire just ever since I was a child, and my family goes way back. We have an old family farm in Meredith, New Hampshire. I live in Wilmot now, and one of my concerns is support for education. The tax base is great because of the second homes, but often there is so much dissension about how to support the schools. And, you know, the only thing people can really turn down in the tax base is how we're going to support our schools and how we're going to provide resources for our students. Do we have any information about that?
So, Meredith, are you saying that more second homeowners tend to be less interested in funding public schools because they don't live
there
full-time?
I don't know the data on it, so that is my question. I've heard conversations from some folks that are older. It's been interesting attending school board meetings and hearing some of the folks that come in and decide to retire here supporting the schools, and then others who really don't want to spend the money.
Okay, great question. Amanda?
Well, I think that there are two separate groups that we're talking about here, the second home owners and those folks who take those second homes and retire into them and become full-time residents and registered voters. Because your second homeowners, they really don't have a say.
They don't vote at town meetings.
Right,
they don't vote
right.
in elections.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there have been states, you know, like Florida, another big vacation home state, Minnesota, where in those areas they actually – second homeowners do face a higher tax rate, a significantly higher tax rate in some cases. In those states, you know, those folks have been known to rally and try to talk to some of the politicians in their second home state and say, hey, this is an unfair rate, and, you know, we don't want to live here where there's this unfair rate. And so they do have leverage if they say, look, you know, we know that we have this huge impact on your economy and we all want to pull out en masse because this is very upsetting to us that we're being taxed at a different rate and being asked to pay for your schools that our kids don't use and whatever.
But we don't do that in New Hampshire.
It's all the same rate. So
the
other aspect, and this is the interesting one that she's talking about, was these folks who are taking those second homes then and retiring up here, and what in the world are they going to do? And it's hard to say because, I mean, on the one hand, you know, you do have and you hear this a lot in New Hampshire that you have retirees say, hey, you know, I'm on a fixed income and my taxes are already too high and I don't want to pay any more taxes and my kids are out of school. I don't want to have to pay for these other kids to go to school. And you do hear that. The question is this particular set of people, because, you know, right now, if you talk to demographers, they'll tell you that, well, you know, baby boomers right now, they're very much supporting their grandchildren because their children are having issues in the job market. So this particular set of people who are looking at retiring up here in whatever numbers, there's not really a lot of solid data on how big of an issue this is going to be, if it's an issue at all. These folks who are doing that and moving up into those areas, are they going to be in that sort of stereotypical New Hampshire retiree mold of, I don't want to pay any more taxes, I already pay enough? Or are they going to be more along the lines of, you know, I know that, you know, I need to support these kids because I'm already, you know, I'm supporting my own grandkids. I know that it's tough and I know that we need to be engaged with education.
Meredith, in other words, it's hard to say, but thanks for the question, Russ.
Well, one thing that I notice, Amanda's right. Politically, at town meeting, there's not a lot of influence. But but the second homeowners express themselves in appealing their property tax assessments very often. In my firm, we do a lot of abatement work. And it's very common for groups of second homeowners, for example, all of the lakefront owners on Governor's Island, to appeal their taxes as a group. We did work for
What basis?
That they feel that their assessments are too high. And it's one way for them to in effect attack their tax bill without – they can't vote, but they can appeal their property taxes. They have the right to do that. So I think that you see that often. And it, part of their thinking is – and it's not really legitimate – is, look, I'm paying full boat taxes.
And
but
not
I have
getting
no
much.
Kids.
Yeah.
I only come up here a couple of weeks a year. I barely use the roads even. I have no trash collection. Give me a break here. Under New Hampshire law, it's you pay proportionate to the value, not proportionate to the services you need. But it's irritating to these second homeowners that their tax bills are high and have gone up. The reason they're high and have gone up is that their property is worth more. But and they like that part, but don't like the fact that because of that, they have to pay higher taxes.
Well, it's interesting, though, Russ. Amanda told us that some states assess property taxes differently based on whether it's primary or secondary. And this idea has come up in New Hampshire before. I think, it must have been 10 years ago, there was a proposal to charge a higher rate to second homeowners to bring in more money to fund schools. But this idea has not gone anywhere in New Hampshire.
I think it would need a constitutional amendment because we have a proportionate tax provision in our Constitution. So it would be very difficult to implement that in New Hampshire.
Let's take another call. This is Bruce in North Conway. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I am a real estate appraiser, and I cover the White Mountains area and the Lakes region. And one comment I wanted to make is the effect that people who come out of state and pay top dollar, especially for lakefront homes, but also those that are adjacent or have views, and the effect that those values have on people that have lived there. I have done many appraisals for people, generally older folks, who have owned their home for 30, 40 years, raised their kids, and can no longer afford to stay in them because of the taxes, because the assessed values have gotten so high. And while there are a lot of advantages to having people come up and pay good money for these homes and pay those taxes, the other effect is that it drives people out of their homes because they can't afford the taxes, and they're trying to take out either a second mortgage or a reverse mortgage.
Well, Bruce, can I ask you a quick question? Given that you're involved in this, I'm glad you called, and we definitely talked about that impact of, you know, rising property values for everybody, even if they can't afford it. So on net, Bruce, what do you think? Is a high concentration of second homes a good thing or not?
I think in general it's a good thing just because of the overall effect it has on tax rates. I live in Bartlett, and we have a low tax rate, and a lot of that is because, granted, we don't have the services that are offered in many towns in Massachusetts, but there are so many second homes in a small town that there are a lot of people, again, who aren't using the services but are helping to pay for them. So I think that's a positive overall.
So net positive, but some caveats.
And another negative, though, is that those property values make it difficult for people who are employed in the local economy, which is, you know, there aren't a lot of high-paying jobs, who also can't afford to live in the communities where they work. So it's that whole workforce housing question that I think is also part of this whole mix.
Right. Bruce, thanks a lot, because, Amanda, we haven't really touched on that yet. There are all the people who support the second home market with jobs, some of them property managers and so forth, but some just clerks at the grocery store or at the antique store, or, you know, people who do lawn maintenance. And he's right. In some instances, you do see people having to live farther and farther away from their jobs because they can't afford to live in that town.
Yeah, that's something. And I mean, that is definitely something that came up in my research, not as much as you might suspect. What actually came up a little bit more was this idea of, you know, talking about what might say, you know, the peak load problem. It's the same issue you deal with utilities, where in the summertime you have high demand for air conditioning. You can't get enough. Well, you have a high demand for seasonal workers in the summertime along the Lakes region, or, you know, in the wintertime elsewhere. And you have this high demand, and then all of a sudden that paycheck evaporates and you suddenly can't get work. So, you know, you might be living outside of the town where you work during those summer months, if you're in the Lakes area, or what you're doing is you're living sort of on the outskirts of that high dollar area. You're away from that. You're beyond that impermeable wall that Russ was talking about with the housing values, and you're commuting maybe into, say, if you live in Moultonboro, maybe you're commuting to Laconia, or you're commuting even to Concord in some cases. So that's definitely an issue. But I think a lot of it does have to do with, just beyond being priced out, this idea of where are the jobs in the off season?
You know, oh, go ahead, Russ. Then I have one
last
question for you.
Amanda's right. The other aspect of it, on the one hand, we've been talking about bidding up the price of year-round housing. But a lot of the jobs that are created, in the study that I referenced earlier back in 1999, said there were about 15,000 jobs in the state that were vacation home driven. They're not great jobs in many respects. They tend to be in restaurants, services like landscaping. Some of them are good, and they allow a lot of entrepreneurs to have a little plumbing business or a little heating and air conditioning. Those are terrific, and I think that in New Hampshire we need those small firms, entrepreneur firms, to support families. But a lot of the jobs are also pretty low-end jobs, so you've got an issue where the jobs are created, but they're low paying.
Well, here's one last quick question I want to turn to you, Russ. A story that made some waves a couple weeks ago. In the U.S. Senate, there's a proposal to give foreigners visas if they buy a home worth $500,000 or more. As Marketplace's reporter aptly put it, trading visas for verandas. What do you think of this idea, Russ?
I don't know. I don't think we need it in New Hampshire. Maybe it would be useful in Florida, where prices have dropped 50% or more, and you know the majority of second homeowners are underwater because they bought recently. So maybe in a place like Nevada or Florida, it would have you could justify it more readily. I don't think it's necessary in New Hampshire. We're doing okay without it.
And real quick to both of you, where do you think, Russ, this second home market is going to go in the next 10 years?
I think it's going to be strong because of the baby boomers. We have so many people between the ages of 45 and 65, and those are the prime second home buying categories. I think the market will stay strong.
See lots of conversions, second homes into full-time, year-round homes, right?
Probably, or year-round homes into part-time occupancy. So it will be dynamic, but we're in a very good position nationally to have a boom. I don't know if you'd so much a boom, but certainly strong support for the vacation home market.
Super quick, Amanda, what do you think?
Sure. Based on the folks that I've been talking to, it sounds like, especially with these real estate agents, just over the past couple years, finally returning to profitability. So, yeah, if they can keep it up. Absolutely.
All right. Both of you, thanks a lot. It's been real interesting. Amanda, thank you for your time, and thanks for making us aware of this issue. It's Amanda Loader, NHPR's State Impact Reporter. Again, State Impact is a project of NPR and NHPR, on the air and online. Russ Thiebaud, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Russ Thiebaud, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer today is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.